Hey, this is October 28th, 2015, Wynn and Terry in Sedona, and we're coming in late on BBS. Hi, everyone on BBS listening on the Internet. It's not our fault. I'm going to tell you who it is. It's Don Newsom. He's late again. So, hi, Don. We love you. You know, we're just saying
that. I love you, man. I love you. You know I love you.
In spite of yourself.
In spite of it all.
All right. Okay. Here we go. So, hi. So, do we have any new people tonight?
Not new people, but some people who were with us some time ago.
Okay. You know, it's interesting because I sent an email out to the big list telling people to ask questions. And, you know, I actually think there's a lot more people that would get benefit that are on my list that actually take the time to figure out what we're doing. And it's so easy to fit what we're doing into identifying it with something else, or I know all that, you know. We all do that. I did that, you know. So,
and then we actually probably do have some new people because I see new phone numbers or new lines that I don't recognize.
Yeah, okay. Thank you to all the new people checking this out. And what happens on these conference calls is, how do I say this? You could say it's not linear. It's not like anything you probably have ever experienced. And I have to be careful because maybe you won't experience it. Maybe you'll be there saying, what's this guy talking about? And, you know, it's not what I say, but just this is my experience of what happens here. I made contact with Terry and Daphne. And if you've read the book, it talks about how that contact started, the whole story of it. In 2002, and in the middle of writing The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And they invited me to ask some questions, which I did for a few years. And I'm thinking, this is amazing. I'm getting answers that are incredible on these questions. And then I made a discovery when I gave a talk. When my book came out in 2004, I gave a talk in San Diego, and while I was talking, there was this incredible energy in the room that I had never experienced around my work. Although I have sat in the room in different times in my life with different spiritual teachers and masters, and I did feel an energy akin to it when I was in the room, but Terry, you're making noise. Thank you.
I'm muted. Sorry.
Thank you. Well, keep an eye on it because then we'll have to unmute her. I did experience that energy with other people who were talking, who were spiritual teachers, masters, whatever. And now that energy was in the room when I was talking. And people rushed out of the room to buy books. And they were saying things like, Jerry was selling books and saying, I can see auras in the room. I never saw auras before. I can see light. That must be what people are talking about. And a number of people made comments like that. So they were experiencing it as well. So since I have these ongoing conversations with this intelligence that tells me they're the Council of Elohim, and historically, Elohim is one of the names for God in the Old Testament, and and it's a name for God the Mormons use. And so, I still have a hard time believing that, even though I think it's true. It's like my mind has a hard time believing that's who they're talking to. And I don't tell people to believe it. I tell people, evaluate this by your experience about what happens. And but at the time that I felt that energy and saw that energy in the room, I did a session and I asked them, could you explain that energy in the room? And they said, that was us. We were helping you. And it kind of blew my mind, because this was like 2 years into the experience of asking questions. And suddenly, this intelligence that calls themselves the Elohim, that says they created the universe, is in the room. And I mean, I was willing to believe it was them, because I couldn't think of another explanation. And it was as good an explanation as any. And there in the room is an energy that people could feel. And I started asking them about this phenomena of the ability to transmit energy from wherever they are to into this realm. And I asked them, if I did this on a conference call, could you do it? Could people on the conference call feel the energy? And, you know, I don't know if I started doing conference calls right at that moment, but I did start doing calls just to small groups of people. And I didn't announce you're supposed to feel energy. I said, what if it doesn't work? So I did conference calls, and we never channeled live on those calls, okay? I read channelings, and I played audios of channelings, but I didn't want to channel live. It was a little bit scary to channel live, because I didn't know what they would say. And I had already been trained, studied enough to know that your source can change. When you're channeling, how do you know you have the same intelligence talking to you today as you do tomorrow? And that there was the possibility of negative sources taking over the line and acting like a positive source. So I certainly didn't want to take the risk of that. And I just played it safe, and I played channelings. And people did feel energy, and it was just a handful of people. And it just kept growing and growing. And, you know, when the energy comes in, and you may not feel it, you may have to come in a while to get tuned in to the energy. And you may have to get your mind out, right? Because it's a subtle feeling. It's kind of feels like you. It doesn't feel like something outside of you. And you suddenly feel more expanded. And sometimes, you know, on the email I sent out today, I put a few of the testimonials of people. And some people really get it right away. And some people, I mean, there's somebody that, you know, sent me an email, more than one person, that said they've been coming into the calls for a year and a half or whatever, and they heard me talking about this energy, and then suddenly they got it. Well, I believe that when you start to feel this energy, you are expanding your own aura, your own energy field, way larger than it's ever been. And it brings up a lot of things to process. And you don't have to believe anything. You just have, except maybe if you don't feel something, let me just hang in and see if I can feel it. In particular, our Sunday call is really powerful. And that is the one where we focus. It's called a personal planetary healing session. And it's 2 hours long. And usually the first hour and talking about one thing or another. And then we do a visualization so people can feel the energy. Some of you who are sensitive, can, as soon as I say, they come in and you can feel the energy, some of you feel the shift in the call because they start to come in. They're watching us right now. And but you have to learn to trust them before you open yourself up to it. And the only way to trust them is to check it out, pay attention, and see how it feels over a couple of months or a couple of weeks, whatever it takes. We have all this stuff we give away for free. You don't have to go to special extensive workshops to get this experience. And you know, we sell things to the group that's paying attention to us, sell things that are really, really unusual and good products in order to support the whole project. And that's the simple story. And on Wednesday, we have everybody submit questions, and we ask their questions. And I never know what's going to happen. And you know, we're channeling why? Because I've grown confident in this. And that, in general, Terry is very highly intended, and I don't believe we've ever gotten a negative source. And, you know, occasionally, she's more focused on some days than others. Occasionally, there might be bleed through from her consciousness. Like for a very long time, when somebody asked a health question, she would always recommend Dr. Marshall, who happens to be her favorite practitioner. And so you have to take these answers that you're going to hear and figure out what resonates as true for you. And the answer might work for someone else, but it doesn't work for you. And it may be for them. And oftentimes, since we're going through similar issues, it may work for you. So don't take any answers as this is what I got to do. Just see if it resonates and you can try it and see if it works. You'll find that in general, the answers are formulated, so they don't take your power away, okay? And they also don't tell you what to believe. And so they don't like presenting themselves as experts on everything, even though they probably are, and they probably know huge amounts of stuff. But they don't like to just say, here's what's true, here's what's true, here's what's true, because it takes away your power a little bit. But they do like very much answering questions that help people grow. And I would say a lot of people have grown as a result of coming into our calls. And keep in mind that if they created the universe in some way, shape, or form, we are here because of them. And things have gotten screwed up down here. And they are available to make things better and to make us better. And you just have to get the feel of it to see how that works. Now, on that note, Hive, can you unmute Terry?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Terry.
Terry, are you there? She might be muted. Hello, Terry.
Oh, she dropped out.
She dropped out.
Yes. So she probably pressed the wrong button. All right.
You know, Terry can be really spacey. And it's probably the reason she can bring through.
I'm here. I think that it went, dropped out, but I'm back.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we are really, really lucky to have Terry doing this and blessing us with this great connection. Anything you want to say, Terry?
Thank you, everybody. Not that fault.
Are you peaceful and relaxed?
No.
No? Okay. let's call in the light and see if we can get into it.
Daddy, I love you, and I thank you also very much from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, thank you, guys. Thank you.
Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person here. And any negativity be taken to the highest realms of light and transmuted to the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy field of planet Earth, through our bodies, and into the center of the Earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our soul, and we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us, and we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And do we have our sources present?
Yes, we greet you in the love side of the one, infinite creator. We are delighted to be with each and every one of you. And please spread our essence, in a way you might say, over the earth plane. And we notice some unrest in the plate. And particularly along the West Coast of America, North America, Central America, and South America. And we send the light in for easing up the pressure. Do you have questions?
Yes, we do. A first question, and maybe I will answer this because the question was asked before, and if you want to add, then I'll give our sources a chance to add something to it. The question is about monatomic gold. Is it a beneficial supplement for human consumption to raise our vibratory energy? And that's from Chris. He didn't give a city, but we don't need it for that question. Chris, we asked this question before. In fact, I was actually trying monatomic gold. I live in Sedona, and there's a company in Sedona that makes it and was selling it. And I did notice an opening of my psychic centers. I did notice an increased opening a little bit. But when I asked the question about it, they said it was something to be very careful about and not take too much of it. They didn't say don't take it at all, but they said don't overdo it. Because because what it does is it can open your psychic centers at the expense of not opening up your lower chakras. And with your lower chakras not opened up, and many, many people have the problem of having their higher chakras open and their lower chakras not open, and you open yourself up when you're not grounded. And you can even open up to negative influences because the grounding of yourself helps to protect you from negative influence. So that was the answer that they gave. This was a few years ago. And I'll turn it over to them now and see if they want to amend, append, or add to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Many sources, some in India, take monatomic gold, and they find that they are able to develop their upper chakras better if they give up sex and become solid. And it does help develop more sensitivity in the upper chakras. However, it creates an imbalance. It creates a dependence upon the monotonic gold. And it is, over a long period of time, detrimental, as the dependence takes away the development on its own, and it becomes dependent upon the monatomic gold. We do not recommend taking it.
Tell me, does the monatomic gold work on the fifth, sixth, and seventh chakras mostly, or does it work on the fourth chakra as well?
Fifth, sixth, and seventh.
That's what I thought. That's what I felt when I took it. And would you put psychedelics and stuff in that same category, the same kind of issue?
Psychedelic burns up a lot of the nutrients that the body needs all at once, and therefore heightens things. But then it doesn't have a replacement for those nutrients that are burned up. And so it does also, as you mentioned, have a similar effect on some of the upper chakras, enhancing color and sound effects, also affecting time.
Thank you. Next question is from Charlene in Durhamville, New York. And Charlene, you asked your question. He said you were told, and instead of trying to validate something you were told, if you don't mind, I'll read that, but I'd like to ask the question so it's slightly more general. I don't think it'll change your answer. It just gives more latitude, because the way she wrote her question is, I was told that my soul group is that of the elders. I don't know who she's who's telling her that. And she's assuming that that's true because somebody told it to her. And it may be true and it may not be true. And then she's asking what entails or what traits are associated with what is known as the elder's soul group. The other problem is sometimes different soul groups get identified in different ways. For example, somebody might say it's the elders and somebody else might say it's the Ra group. It's all the same soul group. So it gets very confusing when you go by name. So I'd like to ask the question in this way. Does Charlene have a connection with a soul group? And can you give any traits about the soul group that she has a connection with?
Thank you. There is a soul group of people that have passed over, that have been in an elder advisory position, often in various tribes, where they become very wise and very respected. And then after death, you collect together, stay together, and become a soul group with the characteristics of wisdom and the ability to advise. You yourself can see if this resonates with you. If you resonate with the idea of being with this type of a group. When someone brings through something and indicates that there is something true for you, then one can use that as a guidepost to see if that has merit or resonance to you. And without taking it as God's honest gospel truth, you can simply check it, use it as information to check it and see if you can expand your horizons by seeing where that might or might not go.
Thank you. Next question is from Tamara in Fresno, California. And she is saying that if all the negative experiences, events in our life for the last 2 years are drawing to a close, then will I start experiencing some positive vibes real soon? I really need a miracle. And Tamara, if you don't mind, I'm just going to tag on a sub-question here. Is there anything that I can do to change these things from my own volition?
Yes, you can. You can take a little time out of the day to bring something cheery in, to get outside of the daily routine, to bring some joy in as you are seeking to bring in a new look, and take a look at what that is you wish to bring in and see if you can spend a few minutes of the day bringing in the energy of it. If you go on the internet, find the energy of what it is that you are looking for and then bring it in a little bit so you can begin to experience and bridge over to the energy that you are wishing to experience.
Thank you. Next question is from Marshall in Lake Leah, Illinois. And the question is, you know, Marshall, I bet they don't answer this, but we can see, okay? Wait a second here. You know, many times I've asked them past life questions, like, did I know so-and-so and whatever? Very rarely do they answer it. The reason is, if people have had a relationship in another lifetime, and you tell someone what the relationship is, there's a subconscious implanting that will try to make the relationship similar to the past life instead of creating the relationship in this life out of the spontaneous interchange. And then that would destroy it. It would be like, let's suppose you asked a question and said, did so-and-so and I, were we married in another life? Some woman you met and feel a lot of connection with. Well, if they said you were, you might ruin the development of the relationship this life and try to bypass the romance and they may not accept it. So knowing about past life relationships is very tricky. And in my case, as when we've asked questions about it, very rarely have they said it. The only time they said it very clearly was with Terry, when they said to look up St. Catherine of Siena. And I think they said that because Terry was so shy, and we were trying to figure out, can we really trust this? And when we looked up St. Catherine and read the story of St. Catherine and saw the picture correspondence, for me, and probably Terry as well, it increased the level of confidence and trust in the material we were doing. But other than that, they very rarely say it. But with that, I'll give you the question. Have I had a past life experience with Wynn? And is it possible there were more than one? Because I have this feeling that he was my father in one life. And why is there the feeling to want to reconnect?
Thank you. When you have such a connection and deja vu, it can usually be solved. And look back as you remember, little flashes can come in, and this applies to others who are trying to remember their past clearly. Look back, and little pieces will come forward, visions, sounds, maybe a look at a robe. A little flash, a little vision, and see if you put all of those little flashes together, then you'll begin to piece together a big memory. The feeling of being connected is one of the pieces. And one can look for other corroborating pieces and visions and memories It can be like the memory of yesterday and a true memory of something that happened in the past life. Then if you see a memory or vision that doesn't fit all of the other pieces, then put that there and see if there is another explanation that includes a new piece too. When you put it together and get your own memory, and your memory can include new pieces, and it all goes together, you will eventually begin to piece together your own past. And nobody can take it away from you because you have understood it. You can also see areas where you would be putting pieces together and suddenly a piece would appear that didn't fit and might lead to a whole bigger vision of the past. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question. This is from, she asked to be left anonymous. Her name is M in Minneapolis. And we are working on a new project called Ahopaye. Sounds like a Native American name. Ahop, I may not be saying it right, I'm pronouncing it right. Ahopaye, which means healing place. Are there things we should know about going forward on this? The project includes many different kinds of folks, all focused on different aspects of healing, healing a place and healing by place, veterans and Dakota people, artists and scholars and integrative medicine folks, foresters and more. We're seeking funding to take ownership of the property by a new nonprofit. Funders are interested. Things seem to be coming.
You're breaking up.
Have you followed me up to now? Or shall I read it again?
Read the last sentence.
Things seem to be coming together rather quickly. The property is now owned by an order of nuns who no longer live there. It is a retreat center now. Seeking any guidance to be generously offered. And then she has the Dakota word for thank you. Fada Maya. Fada Maya. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. The beginning stages of anything are the most important. So each step of the building of the healing center, each person that will be taking part, stand strong in your own evaluation as whether it fits in with the theme, whether this is going to add, whether the individual that you're considering bringing in will fit and will be able to hold up what your vision is for the healing center and will actually be able to contribute the piece that you are looking for and that they are seeking to contribute. You might check references. You might get testimonials from people that have actually been healed by them rather than just standing on their own evaluation. You might get corroboration of what it is that they have been doing and what they can contribute. This is one area to really be careful in The next area is to speak with the owners of the property and see if this is something that will be long-term available to you and will not suddenly be sold or decided to withdraw your presence from it. Those are two things we see to look at. Gwen, are you there?
All right, let me take a look.
Yeah. Let me go.
He just dropped out, yeah.
I came out of trance, so I'm going to go find him.
All right. So let us just hang in here for a moment as we wait for Wynn and Terry. Yeah.
So I'll talk a little bit while I'm on my way to his room. At the beginning of the call today, this is Terry, I was a little flustered because I was putting together some things that we saw, and I think I got glue in my eye, and my eye was going a little bit off-center. So anyway, it's clearing up as we're channeling, so that's good.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, good. All right, Wynn's back. Okay.
So let's get back in the zone. Okay. Let's bring in the light.
I have to go back in. Okay, love everybody. All right.
Are you back?
No, almost back. All right, now I have to go back to trance, which involves an interesting thing. It involves setting all earthly concerns aside and setting anything I've got going on in the middle of to the side, setting mind chatter off to the side so that I'm just the still waters for the bringing through of the sources. So I'm back. And we're back. And do you have
any
questions?
Let's just bring in the energy. Let's all of us bring in the energy right now and hold the space. And are our sources ready?
Yes.
Okay. Next question is from Daniela Saylor. I shouldn't say her last name. Daniela. Forget her last name, okay? And she is in Tucson, Arizona. And it's a good question here. I know that the key to manifestation is being able to focus and believing. However, I can never reach a point within myself to genuinely believe and focus my intent. I feel like my faith is there, but it's muted. What is blocking me, holding me back? What steps can I take to heal this part of myself? And Daniela, let me just say for myself, I have learned that if you want to make something happen, you know, we've been doing these calls for years, and it seemed like no one was ever going to notice, you know, with a few people on. It's like, if you're sure of what you want to do, if you really believe it, then you have to do even little steps. You know, we try to do a big step to make, even myself, a big step to make something manifest. But if you take small steps, and no matter how you feel about it, no matter, you know, how much resistance you feel, you keep doing the physical action that anchors the energy of your intent. And that if your intent is truly on track, and as you anchor those small actions, You start to build the energy for it to manifest. And you have to be patient. But if you do it and you say, nothing happened, well, you're probably going to blow it. So I'll turn it over to our sources and get their take on it. Thank you.
Thank you. If there is a resistance, a non-belief that sensing can come about, you may have skipped some of the steps in between and trying to go to the final result without building the stairway that gets you there. Because if you build a stairway a little at a time, like the first thing that you can believe in toward the final result, the second thing, or you can believe in that one, and that is headed toward the result. And you build the stairway all the way, then you can see at any step of the way where it is that your faith in the system falls down. So building all the missing steps in between that needs to happen for your goal to come about is very important. That is a comment.
Thank you. And, I think a lot of times when people think they want to manifest something, they think of it in the worldly sense, like, okay, I want to be a chiropractor, and I've gone through my training, and I need to open an office, but I don't have any money, and I need to have advertising. And I would say, now that may work for somebody. Maybe they have it all together to do all that, but if they don't, then start calling everyone you know and saying, I'm going to be a chiropractor. I just finished. I want to do treatments on people. I'm doing it on a donation basis. Come over to my house anytime. Make an appointment. And start doing it, actually. Start doing it. It doesn't matter what. Do something else to make money if you have to. In other words, think of it, sometimes when you think of something as a career, It blows the energy. Like if I thought of what I'm doing as a career, it would blow the energy on it. It's like think of it as you want to be of service to people, and then the energy comes back and starts to build. Okay, so that's my thought here. I got one more question, Terry. I promise this will be the last question.
Okay, yeah. And where's giving an example here of a person that wanted to be a plumber, and he went to work for a well-known plumber in the area, and he learned all the aspects of it. And then when the plumber wanted to retire, he was a full-fledged plumber, the person in training. And he was able to buy the truck and all the parts, and he had the knowledge now. And he took over the business, and he's doing as good as the first plumber did and had his ready-made business. So he got his training step by step and was able to move into it.
Thank you. Okay. 6:56. Usually we go slightly late, but I hope we don't get cut off on BBS. If we do, you can listen to the replay. Cleo and Eric, do your questions next week. And Joshua, I know Joshua, I'm making you keep repeating, but I particularly wanted to do new people tonight, and every so often I'll announce that. Jim and New Jersey, Medford, New Jersey. And his question is, for the past 10 or 11 months, I have been doing my best to manage a very difficult situation concerning my business. For the first time in nearly 20 years as a general contractor, I am dealing with a customer who has taken a position of not paying the balance on a job I did for them. I have kept an open mind and did my best to refrain from a self-serving point of view in hopes of understanding the reasoning for the disagreement. You speak often of discernment, and I've established a high degree of confidence in my intuitive ability to eventually see things for what they are. I feel very strongly I'm dealing primarily with a situation of people who simply do not feel they most likely can't be forced to pay what was otherwise agreed to and can make a strong enough case based on technicalities to not make it worth my while to pursue the matter legally. I am not a confrontational person. I've learned to move through life by maneuvering around obstacles when possible rather than needlessly taking them on. I considered asking this question 2 weeks ago, and we often feel ashamed to act in our own best interest. You know what, Jim? I think in 20 years, if you have only one guy that stiffed you, I think that's pretty darn good. That's me. I found the answer to be helpful, but hope to gain new insight on how to move forward. Unfortunately, it's a very sizable amount of money at stake, and simply turning the other cheek isn't so simple. So my question is, how do our sources see my situation? Have I been fair and honest in my position in the matter? More importantly, is there something else at play here that I have not been able to discern? How can I serve my needs without engaging in what seems to be a very constricting 3D set of circumstances that I otherwise have convinced myself are not to be allowed to take control? Thank you. Jim in Medford, New Jersey.
Thank you. We feel and see your point of view to hold on to what is right, just, and correct, and to, as you have done, to see about all options are available. If the gentleman has some secret reason for not paying, for instance, something that he isn't bringing up, that he doesn't have enough money or something, you may have already asked about the possibility of payment. About what he could do. We see that it is important to continue to ask what it is you are due for the job you have done, and find ways to put some pressure in the area that doesn't drive him underground, but yet can keep him looking at what could be done. We see a little bit of reneging on his part. From what was agreed, and backpedaling. However, you are being fair, and we would see to continue to go for to get what money you are due. In ways that you may be able to, we understand that it is maybe confrontational, which is difficult.
One of the things that came to my mind, if I was in that situation, is I will go to the guy and be act as if you're ready to do a full-blown lawsuit. And even if you don't do it, make them think you would do it. And then say, but you suggest two other options. One is you go to an arbitrator, and you both agree to agree with the arbitrator. Two is that you're willing to settle for this much money just to get it, so you don't have to bother with the expense of a lawsuit, and he doesn't have to bother with it. And, you know, without making him wrong for being probably dishonest, which he probably is. But the thing about it is, don't make him wrong, even though he is, and make him feel you're going to take him to court with and sue him, plus for penalties for being irresponsible. You know, what's that called? Punitive damages. And then offer him those two options before you take the next step. Now, you don't have to take the next step. You know, you can either drop it or you can take the next step. But nonetheless, it might be a way to get him to do something. In any case, that is the end of tonight's call. I think we sound like Judge Judy. Okay. Judge Elohim. Okay? Judge Braham. Thank you all for being here. Let's take a moment, send the light to the West Coast to keep earthquakes.
It's a theory, to the Juan de Fuca Street, to the Central America, to South America.
Yeah. And thank you all for being here. And I hope you'll come back on Sunday. Sunday is our most popular call.
All callers are unmuted.
Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Wynn. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry and Wynn.
Thank you, Judge Roth.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Wynn. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your conference is starting in Medford.